This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Why should art be confined to galleries or your living room? Why not expose art to as many people as possible? And that's exactly what a group of Charlotte artists has been trying to do. If you've walked around uptown and nearby neighborhoods, you may have noticed both art and poetry popping up in some unexpected places. The idea is to expand access to public art throughout the city and to enhance neighborhood identity. Some of that is being done through the Neighborhood in Creative Partnership projects. Poetry is popping up in many cases because of the Wall Poems project, and we're going to talk about both. Amy Bagwell is a poet, artist, and co-founder and director of the Wall Poems of Charlotte project. Her partner in that endeavor is Graham Carew, an artist and former welding student at CPCC. He's also part of the public art project in the Elizabeth neighborhood, and Amy Bagwell teaches at CPCC as well. Good morning and welcome to both of you.
Morning.
Morning.
Get a little closer to those microphones. The microphones is your best friend in the room. Don't be shy.
I love you, microphone.
And Todd Stewart is program director of public art for the Arts and Science Council, and he's also a sculptor. Welcome to you.
Welcome. Good morning.
Good morning. I know we all think we know what public art is. I think I know what public art is. We've all seen statues in major city. We've seen the statues on the podiums on the square and places like that out on sidewalks. How does what you're doing differ from traditional public art, or what we think of as traditional public art?
With the Wall Poems, everything that we're doing is text-based. It always starts with the poem. And so there's all manner of public art out there, you're right, that could range from the sort of classic bronze sculpture to a light show. What we do always starts with the text, and all of our poems are by North Carolina writers. So that also makes it a little distinctive even from other text-based projects.
And you are an English teacher, correct?
I'm an English teacher, yes.
Are you an artist as well?
I am.
Okay. You were on this program in the past, not too long ago, as a matter of fact, talking about public art, and we touched a little bit at that time on the Wall Poems of Charlotte Project. For those who did not hear that program, I'm wondering if you could, and maybe they've been wondering about some of the words they've seen pop up on buildings around town, words that have nothing to do with outdoor advertising.
There's no advertising, right?
Where have these poems been installed?
Yeah, I like that you mentioned advertising, because one of the things that we think of with the Wall Poems is that instead of asking people for something, these are words that are, we hope, sort of giving people something. So it's kind of the reverse of advertising in a way. There are 12 pieces that we've completed now. Most of them are uptown. Most of them are painted permanent murals that Scott Nurkin has painted for us on walls. And we've expanded just yesterday, finished our first piece in Plaza Midwood at Soul Gastro Lounge overlooking the patio of Snug Harbor. And that one was painted by Graham and Scott with the text designed by Cynthia Frank, who's faculty at CPCC. We also have done a series of news racks along Tryon Street with Charlotte Center City Partners. Those were all designed by CPCC graphic design students, and they're excerpts from poems by North Carolina writers. And then our biggest project to date has been the Elizabeth Neighborhood installation, which was 40 pieces of art. You know, talk about unexpected places. That one really brings some up.
Yeah, we're going to spend a lot of time talking about that one. I have a friend who lives in Elizabeth and wanted me to get a lot of information from you about this.
Tell all the secrets.
So when you have to design a work of art that goes on the side of a building, it has to include words, a poem, where do you begin, Graham?
Well, we start from the poem originally, and then we try and take in to the history of the building, or where the property of the building, what type of building it is, and a general, I suppose, vibe of the area kind of thing. And we always have three or four different poems that we kind of come down to very quickly, and we kind of go by our gut. And we've touch wood, we've been very lucky so far.
Well, that's part of the artistic process, isn't it?
I mean, you
have to go with your gut to a certain degree, and your vision for what it could be, and as it happens, what changes you need to make it what you see.
I've spent a lot of time walking around uptown, so you kind of already in your mind, you always have those poems or art in those spots kind of thing.
When did this start? These word poem projects.
Almost 3 years ago, we put up our first mural at Dandelion Market in April of 2013.
Is anybody else doing this anywhere else in the country?
Well, I've been getting a lot of messages since we started from people. In fact, I just got one 2 days ago from a fella in I don't remember where it is, but it's not here, who said, you know, we saw what you're doing, and we'd like to do something like that. Could I call you? There's a project in New Jersey. There's someone in New Mexico. So I don't know. I think there may be sort of popping up.
We're so bombarded with outdoor advertising. Why does this work in your mind?
This gets me on my poetry soapbox a little bit. You know, we were inspired to do this by a project in Leidenhallen where they had put 101 poems on walls around the city, this beautiful old city, in their native languages, and they range from Japanese to Arabic to Dutch to English. And so, you know, we didn't come up with this idea. We adapted it for Charlotte and for North Carolina. The reason that I think it works is that people really do want to see poetry and read poetry, but they don't do it. Studies show about 10% of Americans read poetry in any given year. I think that that's because they don't have access to it. I think that's because poetry is one of those things that's been sort of relegated to a high, tiny shelf in the realm of the affluent and the hyper-educated, and very much like jazz. But those same studies show that when people encounter poetry unexpectedly, just like with other public art, they do engage with it. They want to see it. And so, you know, also if you are someone who lives in a place where there's a piece like this and you walk by it all the time, it kind of becomes yours. It kind of, if you want to feel that way about it, it becomes yours. So I think that's why it works.
So let's bring Todd Stewart into this and put, I know you're a sculptor, but put your Arts and Science Council cap on for this part of the conversation, because you are the program director of public art. Why poetry? Why the ASC's interest in putting poetry up on public buildings?
Well, our interest really came from Amy Bagwell and Graham Crew first, and just seeing what they would do. We were aware of the wall poems. Amy and Graham were selected from a group of about 27 other artists that kind of applied for this opportunity for the Neighborhoods and Creative Partnership Project, mm-hmm. along with roughly 22 neighborhoods that actually applied. This was a pretty unique initiative that was spurred by the City of Charlotte and ASC, where we actually gave the neighborhoods and communities of Charlotte the chance to apply for public art in their community if they haven't received it already. So in looking at that, and through the Elizabeth Community Association's application for this particular project, they were really looking for a unique experience. It was going to be pedestrian, something people could travel through, discover these little smaller elements strewn throughout the neighborhood rather than one large landmark piece that maybe you see through vehicular traffic. And that idea of like art in unexpected places and the kind of sensitivity and sensibility that I think Amy and Graham are bringing with the wall poems made them the perfect fit for this community.
There's an old adage in outdoor advertising, no more than 7 words on a billboard. That limits you in terms of poetry, because if people are driving by and it's 15 or 20 or 30 words, they can't finish this. They can't even finish one line of the poem. Does that enter into the decision, or are you really creating these for pedestrians to actually stand back and read the whole thing?
Well, I don't want anyone to crash for reading a poem, as much as I would like for poetry to happen.
City of Charlotte would also like for you to not.
It's not a bad way to go out, though, is it?
No, with the right poem.
Read the right poem. Yeah. Quote the Raven.
Has to be the good poem.
What have we wrought? Mike, to tell you the truth, I've never thought about
that.
But I do think that most of the pieces we put up can be seen. A lot of them can be seen as you're driving, but they need to be approached more closely to be read. For instance, the Trinity Episcopal School piece is 70 feet wide, and you can see it from the loop. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you can't. There's no way you could read it. You could probably see, you know, The People, Yes, which is the title, and it's an excerpt from a very long poem. So we try to make it something that someone can read without, you know, having to spend an hour standing there. Although I do have a dream about wrapping something really long around something that, you know, you'd have to devote a lot of time to seeing, but that's in the future.
You're not only an artist, Graham, you're a welder. And welding is something most people have probably thought of as utilitarian and industrial. You weld parts of a car and parts of a building. But art, is that a traditional tool in the artist's bag, so to speak?
Well, I must confess I'm mainly a 2D person originally, but I discovered a welding program in CPCC, and I took a class in it, and I was very bad at a long time. I still have a lot of scars, but I kind of got hooked at it and went back and back a little bit more. And when this opportunity with ASC came through to do the Elizabeth project, with wall poems, we've always tried to use anyone we can in CPCC, and any of the students, give them an opportunity to come back into it, because I went through the school as well. Yeah. And it was an opportunity to go back and burn some rods, as I say.
Well, from a welder's point of view, and the students who participate in this in welding classes at CPCC, this is a new way of expressing themselves. That's probably the only way they can express themselves, because if you're welding, it's not about expression. It's about making something sturdy and make sure it's going to stay that way.
Yeah.
Same is true for the art you created through this welding project, but it's also something that is creative.
Yeah, we had a head student, Palmer Bradshaw, who, he started off as an artisan, almost kind of craftsman, and throughout the whole process, it became a whole collaborative affair. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had a sculpture background himself, but he was just part of the team also, and you just problem solve on the on site.
When people, I don't know what kind of feedback you've gotten from these poetry installations, but do people realize what they're reading when they read these things? Or do they realize, hey, I'm reading poetry?
I think so. We're bad about putting our names on things because you devil in the details. So I don't know that they always know who did it, although I think people are beginning to sort of see a pattern. Someone asked once, what do you want people's reaction to be to these poems? It was a reporter. And the answer really is, we don't have a prescription. I think when you try to get into prescriptions for reactions to art, you're bordering on some kind of agenda. Do you know what I mean? So this is a backwards way of answering your question. I think that, yes, people immediately, there's some gut level response to text done in a certain way that people say, oh, that's a poem. And it's really hard to define as a teacher when I teach poetry and I say, what is a poem? You know, how do you answer that? Because if I could write a 300-page block of justified text left or right in the margins and say, here's my big poem, you know, and not, you don't get to tell me it's not a poem. So how do you, but still, these things, when people see them, I think they do know it's poetry. But how
surely, but there are rules to poetry, right?
There are rules, and they've all been, they still exist, but most poets break them now. You know, now that we're in the, you know, free verse realm, anything goes. You have to be able to justify, you know, I got to defend why I think my 300-page block is a poem. Mm-hmm. But if I say it is, it's just like art. You know, if I say, look at my water bottle art, I drank just the right amount to make this beautiful. You know, nobody may want to look at it or buy it, but here's my water bottle. I'll leave this for you, Mike.
Now you're getting into morally safer territory, because he's done a lot of pieces on 60 Minutes about what really is and is not art, particularly when it comes to contemporary art. You mentioned that a lot of poems don't get read. Only 10% of the American public read poetry for the most part. Is this kind of a surreptitious way to get them to realize, I like poetry, maybe I should investigate this more deeply?
It's absolutely wide open and proclaimed way to say, here are your poems, because all of the poems belong to all of us, I think, and we just need access to them.
Amy Bagwell is a poet and an artist and co-founder and director of the Wall Poems of Charlotte. We're going to come back and talk more about that and what's going on in Elizabeth with this project in just a couple of seconds. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Earl's Grocery and Eatery, featuring menus specifically created for home and stadium tailgate parties. More information available at earlsgrocery.com. A year after the Charlotte City Council narrowly rejected a controversial proposal to expand the city's non-discrimination ordinance, newly elected Mayor Jennifer Roberts wants the council to revisit the issue, including the provision that would allow transgender people to use the bathroom of their choice. We expect the same people to be on the same sides of that issue at a public meeting scheduled for Monday night, and we will hear from both sides Monday morning on this program at 9. By the way, you can see a slideshow of some of the artwork we're talking about this morning on our website at wfae.org/Charlotte Talks. And we're coming right back.
Oh. On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup, candidates make their final campaign sprint through Iowa, Republicans plan a debate without Donald Trump, and Michigan's governor appoints a committee to fix Flint's water crisis.
Join the Diane Rehm Show and the News Roundup from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about art in unexpected places today. We're talking about poetry being woven into art. We're talking about welding being woven into the art and poetry, particularly what's going on in Elizabeth, which we're going to talk about in a second. Amy Bagwell is a poet and artist, co-founder along with Graham Carew of the Wall Poems of Charlotte. She's also one of the coordinators of Skyline Artists in Residence, which we'll be talking about later in the program, too. Graham Carew is with us, and so is Todd Stewart, who is a resident artist and at the Skyline Artists in Residence, and also the Program Director of Public Art with the Arts and Science Council. That's a mouthful, isn't it? I know that the ASC, it's your job to believe in the positive impact of art and the positive impact of visual art and what it can do to its surroundings. That applies to poetry as well?
I believe so. I mean, I'm fortunate enough to work at with an organization that shares my passion, and it directly aligns with what I want to see in the world. And I think really poetry for me really responds to gut instinct and intention. I mean, going back to some of our earlier conversation, the wall poems I've kind of encountered, even if I don't read it in its entirety, if I can pick out a word or a snippet, and it becomes something that I reinvestigate every time I go by Dandelion Market or a particular building or a particular street. I think it's something similar between that and public art. There's something about it being in a context, becoming familiar, but also kind of jarring people into just being more aware or enhancing their awareness of their surroundings and what's going on around them.
Graham, I know you're not from around here. You're up in the Highlands.
Yes, sir.
Irish or Scottish?
Irish.
Irish. Yeah. Well, the Irish have a great history of literature and a great history of poetry, but all these poems are from North Carolina poets. Does that rub you the wrong way?
No, not really. Myself and Amy, we kind of differ when it comes to poetry a little bit because, I mean, Irish people love to talk, apart from me, sorry. But they love to see, and in bars, and, you know, everyone sings and kind of things like this. So poetry is almost part of the language kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it's more the man on the street or the working man's kind of has poetry in their blood almost. And when I came over to Charlotte, I quickly discovered that not many people are originally from Charlotte. Sure. And I met Amy through CPCC, and Amy was my English professor. And I discovered, firstly, that North Carolina was very, very big. And and then that there's a lot of poetry here, a lot of literary history here. And it was just, if people are coming to live in Charlotte, they should learn a little bit more about their history of Charlotte and the history of North Carolina. And that's why it was like, let's work with North Carolina poets.
How do you choose the poets, the poems that you want to put up on walls around town as part of art projects?
When we first started doing this, interesting that you bring up the Irish connection, because we began with an Irish-American poet, A.R. Ammons, with the first piece at Dandelion Market, the gorgeous poem Salute. And when we started working on that, we wanted to find an Irish-American poet. That's not hard. To find an Irish-American poet from North Carolina. And we wanted to find something that sort of reflected the spirit of the place. And that's we try to pick a poem, as Graham was saying, that fits the site, that fits the use, the neighbors, the stories, the history, the passersby, the feel. But when we began working on our second piece and our third piece, I kind of was reading every poem every time, you know, and dog-earing, and Graham said, this is not a good system. You know, I was developing this twitch in my right eye. And, and so we decided that what we would do is create a catalog of sort of our 50 favorite North Carolina poems that we wanted to put somewhere. And then I began reaching out to poets that I knew and saying, would you like to suggest, instead of me reading your five books and picking three poems and then asking if we could use them, would you like to send a few poems that you'd like to see on a wall? And so that's worked really well. So we kind of have this this small catalog of poems that we'd like to see somewhere, and that's where we're pulling from.
It's about 500, rather than 50.
It may be bigger than 50, yeah.
This may be separate from the neighborhood and creative partnership projects that are going on, where you're trying to associate the art with the neighborhood that it's living in, but is this part of that? Do you try to associate whatever message is in the poem with the area or the wall of the building that you're
right.
putting it on?
Right. I mean, for sure, it needs to work where it is. It may not be as straightforward as message, although with Trinity, for instance, that is definitely an emblematic piece for the school. Mm-hmm. And we only had one poem we went to them with. We said, this should be the poem. Poetry consists of so many layers, and where it's going is another layer. And all of that needs to work together. I mean, that said, that my sort of tax on the project is I don't want to put a poem up that I don't love. So it doesn't have to be a poem I already know. But, you know, I don't want to drive around and look at one and say, well, that's a poem I like.
How do you get permission to put these poems up on the walls of buildings that are not public-owned necessarily, not public-owned buildings?
How do we get permission, Graham?
I don't really know. Lots of different stories.
Because you're not graffiti artists.
No, we're not.
You're not doing this
not
in the dead of night with a spray can.
Not that you and the listeners know of, anyway. No one said no yet.
Really?
Right. Knock on wood. People like poetry. I know that's shocking. It's sort of like people like Brussels sprouts, but they do. And so people say yes when we say, could we put a poem on your wall? They may or may not want to pay for what it costs. Some owners do. Otherwise, we've gotten funding from, you know, we had this City of Charlotte Arts and Science Council project. We've got funding from the Knight Foundation, which has been wonderful. We're doing 6 buildings with their support. But no one has said, oh, absolutely not. I would never want to see a poem on my building. And then after we did a few, we started having people come to us and yeah. say, would you like to put something
on? We have been
on
very
our wall?
Lucky that everyone has just loved the idea.
Well, one of them is on a building right down the street. It's actually, there are a couple of buildings down the street that you have poems on, but one is the Dixie Tavern, and it is being converted. It's right on the Lynx Rail Line, and it's being converted to the headquarters of Google Fiber. Are they going to allow you to keep the poem on
that
the side
is,
of their building?
You're just driving a dagger right through my heart, Mike.
Okay. Sorry.
No. It's okay. When we began this project, we went and spoke with Daniel and David Levine because we wanted to put a poem on the Bail Bonds building, the Tree Lure House there across
right.
from Imaginon.
And
that was
you did, didn't you?
That was our dream. We finally did that Donald Justice piece, Bus Stop. But the Levines offered us 6 buildings. We asked for one, and they said, yeah, would you like 5 other walls? And among those was Dixie's Tavern mm-hmm. and also the building across from UNC Center City where we have the Fred Chappell first novel poem. Well, Dixie's we got done, and it was a gorgeous design that Cynthia did, and then they took it down. But so because Google Fiber, when they moved in just recently, they took the whole building back to historic standards. So they had to do the brick and they had to do the – and so we were working on Bus Stop. And then I walked up to 7th Street Market and I see them sandblasting – you know, Daniel had warned us. I see them sandblasting the poem off. So I'm walking into the market, you know, weeping like a fool because the poem's coming down. But our hope is that they will be open to the idea of putting it back up. It really worked there.
One of the goals of the Arts and Science Council, Todd, in these public art and word art installations is to spread them throughout the city, not just in the downtown area. Where have you been able to place and where are you thinking of placing future works?
So right now we're finishing up the Neighborhoods and Creative Partnership projects, and that was the first real push from the City of Charlotte to get NASC to get public art mainly out of this uptown area and into some of the neighborhoods who have yet to receive it. We have 5 opportunities going on with those. That's the Elizabeth community, of course, Reed Park, Grove Park, Sedgefield, and the Shamrock Corridor, which is actually 8 different neighborhoods in the Shamrock area that are kind of come together.
And these neighborhoods applied to be part of this. 22 neighborhoods applied. You've selected 5. I guess money is a consideration here. You can only do so many at a time. But how do you explain that? 22 neighborhoods jumped on the bandwagon and said, I want this. We want this.
And, this happened right as I was joining ASC. I would like to see how many more now that these have kind of spread out would join up or apply for future iterations of this if we were to do so. But I think that the city of Charlotte and the county were seeing like a real drive for more public art in spaces because people want to see their values and these things that they hold dear to them reflected in their communities and reflected in their natural and urban environment.
So at what stage of development are the projects for the five neighborhoods that you mentioned?
We've just finished up Elizabeth Reed Park. We actually did an interesting project there. It was a collaboration between the city of Charlotte and the Mecklenburg County Park and Rec to create a neighborhood park. Mm-hmm. And the work is cited in that. Laurel Holtzapfel, Sean Cassidy, and Lauren Duran did a beautiful job with that. Grove Park, sculptor Dana Greengrass actually finished up his sculpture, I believe, in October for the intersection of East W.T. Harris Boulevard and North Sharon Amity. And artist Paula Smith, who also works at CPCC as a ceramics instructor, is completing her fabrication for the Sedgefield community. They'll be getting a ceramic sculpture.
And where will that go?
That is going on Marsh Road near the Sedgefield Elementary School. We've actually gotten some property there.
Each of these projects, these art projects, whether they contain poetry or not, are supposed to relate to the neighborhoods in which they're being installed. Yeah. Who makes that decision on what story these pieces are going to
tell? Well, that's a great question because in ASC's mission to really ensure access to a cultural community and a relevant cultural community, a big part of our public art program from the very beginning is community engagement. So although the products or the artworks are what are seen, recognized, and kind of loved in the end, mm-hmm. I really see public art as a process. And from the very beginning, it's a collaboration between our stakeholders in the city officials, but more importantly, the communities. Amy and Graham got to know the Elizabeth Community Association members very well. Nancy Albert and Chris Solo were instrumental to kind of pushing this forward, not only in just getting the excitement surrounding it, getting people to community meetings. I think we held about three or four mm-hmm. different just for this particular project. There were a number of private community meetings just to raise funds. We are getting a wall poem that corresponds to the project overall in addition to the Neighborhood and Creative Partnership project. So
let's talk about that Elizabeth project because you've just finished it up and it's multifaceted. It's a wall poem project. It's a sculptural project. It is a visual art it's a two-dimensional art project. You faced a challenge in that you could not use the sides of buildings because all the buildings are private homes.
Right.
And you could only use
city property
city
or city
property,
right-of-way.
Which is pretty much trees. So how did you overcome the challenge?
You know, all art is problem-solving, right?
Okay.
And Todd's right. The Elizabeth neighborhood, the community was incredible, and they were so open to doing something different. And they knew they didn't want a monument or sort of a history mural, which is lucky because that isn't something we probably could have done very well. But they were really, really open and interested in doing something different, something a little daring. And so we spotted a couple of places we could work in the city trees between the sidewalk and the street. We could work in this roundabout at 8th and Lamar.
Right.
And we could work on the fence around the water tower that belongs to utilities. And there were some restrictions on even those elements. But together with the neighborhood, we developed an idea that we hope works. We really, really like it.
And the idea is, what you've come up with, are these small framed works of art that are hanging on the trees, which contain not only visual artistic elements, but also pieces of the poem.
Right.
Where did the poem come from? Did you write it?
I did. Graham made me write the poem for the neighborhood.
Because the idea was to use the history of the neighborhood
it was
to
so
tell
cool.
its story, correct?
When we started researching the neighborhood, we found out some stuff that, you know, and I live just down the street and spend a lot of time in the neighborhood, but there were lots of things we didn't know. You know, Independence Park was a reservoir, which I'd kind of heard. And before it was a reservoir, there was a slave cemetery at the corner of the park at Hawthorne and 7th. And that slave cemetery was destroyed when the reservoir was drained and the park put in. And, you know, I remember inquiring to Tom Hanchett, did you know about this little tiny news piece we found somewhere? And this was a neat discovery.
Tom Hanchett is the retired historian at the Levy Museum of
Who's
the
so
South.
Generous. Yeah. But we found out
who knows everything.
He knows everything, doesn't he? We found out that there were a large number of jazz musicians living in the neighborhood in sort of the 20s and 30s and 40s. And lady jazz singers in this one rooming house, that there were a large number of traveling salesmen who lived in the neighborhood, that there was a huge rose garden that was destroyed when Independence Park was built. I'm sorry, Independence Boulevard. And so all of that we found, and then there wasn't a poem that fit exactly. And so I took a shot at it, not as a history poem, but as a love poem, where the idea is there's this traveling salesman who keeps leaving and this woman who wants him to stay. And then all of those things that we just talked about, those other discoveries, are hinted at in the poem.
And you call the framed works of art word houses. Is that, who came up with that? I've never heard that before.
On one of our walks through the neighborhood, one of the streets was a little bird box hanging through just randomly on one of the trees. Mm-hmm. And dotted out throughout the neighborhood, there was these objects that I was like, we should just hang, we should make boxes. And I'm not even 100% sure where these ideas come anymore. It's kind of, I say one thing, Amy says another thing, and suddenly we have a project.
And it just kind of happens. What you are really responsible for, I gather, is the roundabout sculpture, which is, I'm not sure how to describe this, but why don't you do it? Because it's in the center, there's a tree in the center of the roundabout, and this encircles the tree, and it includes, if I'm not mistaken, the name of the poem that you wrote. Which is called, what, Now is Fireworks?
That's right, Now is Fireworks.
Why the name?
The poem is called Now is Fireworks, and it starts off, look at me, now is fireworks. I guess the idea is stop thinking about other moments, because it is right now. And fireworks, as you know, they're there and then they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
And so we thought it was a good idea to capture that on the sculpture, which is 3 feet tall. It's made of stainless steel. The words are cut out of it. It's kind of a carpe diem message in addition to being the title of the poem.
I mean, the real reason we used it was because it was the biggest piece of land that we found in the whole neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to use this piece. And we were talking to safety.
Right. CDOT.
Yeah, no, Jim Keenan, program manager for engineering with the city, was instrumental.
Jim Keenan came out. He was very good one day, and he came out to us and was like, if we can put images on the fence, for example, can we do it this way? And he was like, no, but maybe this way. And with the roundabout, we went down to him and there was shrubs in there and it was all nasty. And we were like, can we take these out? And he was, you can only be this high and this high. And then he, well, can we use steel? And he was like, yes. So
okay.
It developed as a matter of practicality into something beautiful.
The artwork on the fence surrounding the water tower is artwork that you see and then you don't. How did you achieve that?
These we were told we couldn't block visibility into the area around the water tower because then, you know, who knows what people might be doing. And so we created these lenticular images, and there are a few words, and then there are...
That's a new word for me, lenticular.
I might have made it up.
That's a real word.
So Graham painted these...
It's an Irish word.
These images from the poem. There are bluebirds in flight and hawks and roses from the poem. And then they're printed on vinyl strips and they're pasted on the inner rails of the fence. So you see them at one angle and then they disappear.
So it's kind of like those three-dimensional images that you see on cards where you turn it and it's one minute. As you turn it, the image changes.
That is exactly a lenticular image.
A lenticular image. I've learned something new here this morning. We have to take a break. We're coming back with more in just a moment. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Robinson Bradshaw, committed to providing collaborative legal solutions to the business community. Offices in Charlotte, Rock Hill, and the Research Triangle, RobinsonBradshaw.com. Presidential candidates make final campaign sprints through Iowa. Republicans plan to debate without, or they did debate actually last night, without Donald Trump. And Michigan's governor appoints a committee to fix Flint's water crisis. Just some of the stories that a panel of journalists will be talking about with guest host Indira Lakshmanan in the national hour of the weekly news roundup in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock. The international comes your way at 11. And when we come back, we're going to continue talking about art in unexpected places. You can see a slideshow of some of what we're talking about this morning on our website at wfae.org/Charlotte Talks. We're back in just a moment.
This is Robert Siegel. Did you know that your car can do a lot more than just get you to work and back and leak oil? That old car of yours can also bring all of us the latest news from the Middle East, or analysis of where the economy's going, or a great movie review. When you donate your old car to this station, they'll turn it into the programs you love. Here's how.
Call 855-277-2346 or visit WFAE.org to learn more.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about art in unexpected places, also neighborhood art that's being designed for particular neighborhoods to reflect the character and the history of those neighborhoods. Do you think that art in Charlotte reflects the community and neighborhoods it occupies? And what would you like to see more of with regard to art in the city? You can let us know on Facebook or Twitter or through email at charlottetalks@wfae.org. We're talking to Amy Bagwell, poet and artist, and Graham Carew, artist and welder, and both are co-founders of the Wall Poems of Charlotte Project. Todd Stewart is a resident artist, artist in residence, I should say, at the Skyline Artist in Residence program, which we're about to talk about, and a sculptor and the program director of public art for the Arts and Science Council. The images on the fence, the lenticular art, which I will say now for the rest of the day, at the Water Tower in Elizabeth. What is that image?
There's a series. There are nine total. The words "Look at me" appear along the fence on 8th, and then we have a bluebird at rest and a bluebird in flight and a hawk facing you and a hawk in flight. They all come from references in the poem, and they're paintings that Graham did that we sent for printing.
Did you know that this effect of now you see it, now you don't would work?
In theory, yes, but It was a bit nervous putting him up, and we just keep fit kind of thing. Like, so thank God it worked.
And did you design the sculpture in the roundabout?
It was a collaborative effect. I think from walking through the neighborhood and the fact that the river through the neighborhood became kind of central part of to the poem and stuff, that we just wanted everything to be fluid, and that's why the wall, the word boxes are blue, mm-hmm. and they kind of go through, like they swerve through the neighborhood, and then I suppose the roundabout is obviously round again.
Outdoor public art has to be made of substantial materials because mm-hmm. it's out there in the weather for years and years and years, and these word boxes, if that's what they're, word houses,
right.
Look like, maybe they're not, but they look to me in the photographs that I've seen, which, by the way, we have up on our website at WFAE.org, like picture frames, like wooden picture frames that have been painted in various colors with a piece of art in them and a piece of the poetry, a line mm-hmm. of the poetry in the box. Are they designed to last
a long time? They're temporary. No, there are three elements. There's a temporary element, which is the word houses, a semi-permanent. The fence images are going to last about 3 years. And the stainless steel sculpture in the roundabout is a permanent piece. So we had sort of a tiered approach to time with this. The word houses will not last more than 6 months. And, in fact, four have already been stolen. Which is kind of a nice
That was going to be one of my questions, and I hesitated to ask it.
Stolen is a strong word.
Stolen is a strong word. Gifted to could be another.
Yes, reappropriated.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was going to ask that question, but I didn't want to plant a seed in somebody's mind who might be listening.
Yeah.
Did that occur to you, that would happen when you put them up? Because they're just affixed to the trees with what, wire?
Right. We knew that, and we told the neighborhood. We thought that was part of the interactive, you know, sort
How
of
generous thing. Of you.
Well,
it is a love poem, so it's a gift to the neighborhood.
Well, the pieces that are missing, did they steal a particular line of poetry that resonates somehow?
The first one that disappeared had a bird, the photograph of a dead bird under a stenciled cutout of a live bird, and the line was like the buried and forgotten. And I thought it was really interesting that would be the first one someone grabbed.
Huh. So are there plans to refresh that part of this project or just to let it go away over time?
It goes just like love.
You know, that's what we're going to talk about now, the ephemeral nature of much of this. There's another artistic endeavor that you're all involved in. It's been going on since July, I believe, but it ends tonight. It's the final showcase for the Skyline Artist in Residence at the Goodyear Building downtown. Since July, they've turned that old tire store on, I guess it's Graham Street, into a place where artists of all stripes could create, perform, display, even sell their works. When you guys opened the doors to this showcase, I guess you knew your time there was going to be short. The building is scheduled for demolition to make way for another downtown building of sorts. And tonight is your swan song, and all three of the guests in this first segment are part of this, and Amy Bagwell is too. She is the coordinator or the co-coordinator of the Skyline Artists in Residence, along with Graham Carew and Amy Herman, who is also an art instructor at CPCC and the owner of Vintage Charlotte, which hosts pop-up markets. And Todd Stewart, as I've alluded to, is one of the artists in residence there. Amy Herman, welcome.
Thanks.
Nice to have you here.
Thanks for having
you
us.
You and Amy Bagwell and Graham are coordinators for this program, as I just said, which started in July. Slated for the Wrecking Ball before you opened the doors.
Yes.
So why would you want to open the doors?
The idea behind this whole program is that there's a lot of underused space in Charlotte mm-hmm. at all times, and there's not a lot of space for artists at any time. And so why not kind of solve one problem with this empty space?
Came to whom? Did you go to the people who bought the Goodyear building and say, as long as you're not going to tear it down, we'll use it? Or do they come to you for some reason?
They kind of came to us. They requested a proposal for maybe what could activate the space in the time that it was going to be empty. And so we made a proposal and they accepted. And that's pretty much how it happened.
So they came to you.
Yeah.
I read, and I could have gotten this wrong. It's Crescent Communities, I
Correct.
Believe. And they had done something similar to this in Nashville, Tennessee. Is that correct?
I don't think they've done an artist in residence project. They do find creative ways to, I guess, sort of work where they're working. But this is the first program of this sort that they've done.
They had in Nashville, they had done the Skyline magazine. It was like a little pamphlet that mm-hmm. they put out. Mm-hmm. And that's actually how they first encountered both myself and the Wall Poems team. Mm-hmm. And so we were featured in this little zine that they made. And then we attended this kind of creative launch at Goodyear, which is when they requested that we put forth this proposal.
So there are a number of places where artists can exhibit their work. There are lots of galleries around town, but not a lot of spaces for them to actually work in. That's got to be a pretty big challenge, particularly for sculptors who require some space. And these were all short-term residencies for these artists. How short?
1 month.
Why so short? Well, you only had a 6-month lifespan on the building, but why so short?
And actually, when we made the proposal, we only had about 4 months. So we were trying to make the most impact on the creative community in the amount of time available. And then we received an extension, a 3-month extension. And so our total time in the building will have been 7 months. But at the time of inception, we only had that 4-month period.
So, Todd, you're the sculptor amongst us here. How rare is it to find space in which to work, sufficient space in which to work?
I've tried really hard since I've moved here. I came to Charlotte in 2014. I live on the west side. There's a lot of industrial spaces there, but mm-hmm. I've been unable to get my foot in the door. I work out of a 2-car garage behind my house right now. My neighbors hate me. So,
why are you loud?
Yeah, grinding metal and beating on stuff.
So what did this residency mean to you?
It meant a lot. I mean, for one, it's just a really unique opportunity. I mean, there's the idea of ample space, but a very unique space with a context and a history all its own. And I felt like I had to respond to that. So, and I think I can share this with other people that attended the residency or the other artists that participated. I mean, you kind of had this really intense experience, a very short amount of time. There was all this information to work with. We were all trying to respond to the place in some way, and you just had to go for it. It got me out of my comfort zone a little bit and away from the work I was doing on my own.
Artists working in the building, in this Goodyear tire store, this old Goodyear tire store, actually used parts of the building in their work. Was that mandated, or was that something that you just came up with?
It was something that we all discussed early on when this project was initiated. I think Amy Herman and Amy Bagwell both kind of, in some of the first meetings I had with them, said that would be great. It was mm-hmm. never like, sign on the dotted line, you will use something of the building. But for myself, it was kind of the catalyst. It was what I wanted to happen.
And one of you, and it could have been you, one of the artists found notes that workers had left behind, and one worker had carved his name into a part of the building several times.
Coley, yeah. So I was there in July, and I have a long history of breaking into buildings from my youth, and that was what we did in Liberty, South Carolina, where there was not much else to do. And so the first thing I did for a week.
There's a name for that. I had a guy on the program not too long ago.
Urban spelunking.
Exactly right. There's the name for it. I knew.
Yeah, that's fancy. No, I just broke into buildings, but but yeah, the first week I was there, I'll be honest, I was a little frazzled because it was such a great space and I didn't want to mess it up. I wanted to do something of importance. So as I was trying to calm myself down, I was just really exploring every nook and cranny of this place. And I mean, there's a lot of people that worked there over the years, and as you would, there's a lot of really hilarious graffiti kind of throughout the different tire storage areas and the bathrooms, areas like that.
Yeah.
There was a real human presence to it. I mean, it was kind of seeped into the pores of the place.
So what did you end up creating?
I did one large site-specific wall relief. I actually – there was a major wall. I had the middle bay with all the garage doors, and that space was split between where they would work on the automobiles and where they would do storage for tires, where they were replacing tires. Well, I took most of the thin plywood or masonite down from that wall, revealed this screen, painted that material, and cut it back into this kind of undulating pattern. So it was kind of like a really abstract wall relief on that. And I also used a lot of various different pieces of plywood and material to create a number of wall pieces that I took with me, of course.
How long did it take you to do this?
I had a month.
To conceive it and actually create it, a month.
I had a month.
That's a lot of work.
It is.
Because you have a day job.
Yes.
And yet you knew it was only going to last for a month.
It was a lot of late nights. I mean, it's just a labor of love. It's what I wanted.
But I mean, did you remove it intact, or does it exist someplace else, or did it exist in the moment in that building at that time, and now it's not?
The site-specific piece is going to come down with the building. It's going to stay there.
How does that make you feel? I can't fathom that.
I'm absolutely fine with it. I mean, I made it kind of to the place from the materials of the place, and in a way as a kind of a tribute to the place, so I have no worry
about
it.
Would you be there the day they take the building down?
I don't know, probably. If we don't take it down first, it might just implode.
Well, the artists involved in this, Amy Herman, were not just visual artists. They were performers involved as well. 33 resident artists, 32 visiting artists. I'm not sure the difference. 74 new works of art were created, along with 52 performances at showcases and events. What kinds of art were created in the lifespan of this project?
Every type of art you could think of that can be made in a tire shop. so, you know, some restrictions in that we don't have, you know, a kiln for ceramics, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But there's sculpture, there's painting, there's collage, there's, you know, site-specific work and not. And then there's dance performance, experimental theater, experimental jazz, other types of music were explored. So it really runs the gamut of kind of all types of art.
So when I say that you are one of the coordinators of this project, it is because you can't have somebody cutting metal while a dance performance or a theater performance is going on. You have to schedule these things in, right?
We did not really schedule them. We kind of said, you know, each month we had three artists or artist groups in residence, and we said, you guys can figure it out. And part of that freedom, we think, is what made this so successful.
Where would these people have gone without this space? Where will they go now?
I don't know where they would have gone. We are hopeful that this program has a future past Goodyear. We don't know exactly what that looks like yet.
Was most of the art designed to die with the building, or is the art being sold?
The building alterations that people did, knowing that that they would come down with the building, are meant for that, you know. And if you come out, you'll see all these new exterior alterations, which are incredible paintings, 3D work. But artists also made their own individual pieces, as Todd did. I always mention that Holly Keough made 6 oil paintings in her month of residence. You know, and those 6 oil paintings went with her when she left, but her giant paste-up of in vinyl of one of them on the bay door, that stays. So so the artists did something to the building, but they also made their own art that they took or sold.
And even though you're shutting the doors tonight at midnight, you've been approached, I'm told, by other developers who have similar buildings maybe in waiting, correct?
We have been approached by other developers who have buildings. We've had several attractive offers for buildings. I think the one thing that's really important to realize is that Crescent has not only given us kind of the keys to the building, they're also covering the costs of utilities. And in addition, Crescent and the partners on this site are actually paying for this program. So it's not just supplying an empty building. There's also program costs. And one of the main things that we really look to for this program to kind of set this precedence is that artists need to be paid for the work that they're doing.
Yeah.
So each artist who was in residence and their guests and the guest artists that we invited were all paid for the work that they did in the building.
So what are you planning tonight? The final moments of the building.
Stunned start tonight at sobriety. 6. Whispers. We have 14 artists showing work tonight, 6 new murals and installations inside and outside the building. I've done something manic with tape. There are, I think, 7 performances tonight between bands, and it culminates with a DJ.
And you told our Sarah D'Elia here at WFAE that occupying this building prior to its demise was like a beautiful Viking funeral where you pile someone on this wooden raft and cover them with furs and send them off into the water and fire the flaming arrow. That's
so poetic.
Yes, it's very poetic. It gets fired tonight. Amy Bagwell, Graham Carew, Amy Herman, all co-coordinators of the Skyline Artists in Residence program, and Amy and Graham and Todd, part of the... I think the Wall of Poems Project in Charlotte as well. Thank you all for the hour.